You gotta learn, it's your turn to earn what you deserve. Go girls, you can do it. I know it's hard, but you get through it. Hey, CC on the beat, and I wanted to say, everybody clap your hands my way.
Hello to all our listeners, and thank you for tuning in to the Tea and the Why podcast, where we spill the tea and discuss why it's relevant. I'm Tara.
And I'm Yami.
And we're coming to you live from the oldest prison in the country, Framingham State Prison for Women in Framingham, Massachusetts. The discussion topic today is, does earning a college education in Framingham State Prison actually produce the positive change it was designed to create in one's behavior and attitude?
This is something that opinions will go back and forth on, but I think the best way to answer this is to ask someone who has gone through the Boston University Prison Education Program. Today's special guest speaker, Miss Angie. She is going to share with us her experiences in the prison education program. Hey, Angie, how are you?
I'm feeling blessed and excited. Thank you both so much for this invitation.
We're blessed also and super excited to have you here because you know you're such an inspiration to all the women here in Framingham that are serious and committed to getting a college education.
Education is such an inspiration to me, so being here in person to discuss my journey is such a treat.
Oh, for sure. Now, you mentioned before in class that it took you 11 times to get your GED, and I truly admire the fight in you, but how'd that make you feel?
Well, honestly, I felt frustrated. After taking it so many times, I felt as if it would never happen for me. Many of my friends who were like family to me were already enrolled in the prison program, but yet here I was still struggling just to get my GED. And even though it was discouraging at times, all my friends and family continued to encourage me not to give up, especially the prison principal, Marsha Gannon.
I can so relate to that because it was my close friends and Marsha who encouraged me to further my education. I just read this article called Doing Time Wisely, and it spoke about cultural capital and how it's defined as exposure to the value of education by family members and teachers. And I believe this to be true because these are the people who helped me break down my walls of doubt and resistance so that I could pursue my education. Is this something you can relate to, Yami?
Yes. Basically the same thing. All the staff that I built a good rapport with basically kept pushing me, even when I didn't want to be pushed, you know? I had my friends telling me how much better I could be doing, and eventually it came to a point where I was like, I gotta focus. Those people who I figured would have given up on me by now were right there pushing me. And now I'm an A student.
I know that's right. So Angie, after that long journey, how'd you find the courage to take the BU entrance exam and further your education?
Well, I knew once I got my GED that I was definitely going to take the entrance exam. I no longer felt stupid. My diploma, it gave me so much confidence, and I believed that I could go further than I ever imagined, and that the sky was truly the limit.
Now, when you say the word stupid, it brings up some really bad memories for me also, because I remember feeling the same way in grade school. I never wanted to admit this to anyone because, let's be real, who wants to admit that they feel stupid? But after reading Push Out by Monique Morris, I realized that this is a common ideology amongst Black girls in America. There's this quote that says, they say things like, school's not for me, or I was never good at school, when their performance may actually be impaired by many other factors, including like socioeconomic conditions, differential learning styles, and the quality of instruction at their schools. And I can attest that all these factors rang true to me as a student. And now that I'm about to get my bachelor's degree, I know the key and most crucial thing that makes education work for anyone.
What's that?
It's confidence. Education is absolutely nothing without confidence. And the definition of education should go as follows. Education, the knowledge you receive and the valuable lessons that you learn when you're absolutely confident in yourself and your ability to learn.
I totally agree. You can have all the smarts in the world, but if you don't have confidence in yourself and the ability to succeed, you won't get very far. So Angie, you've shared with us that you had an uphill battle with your education, but here you are, only a few weeks away from getting your bachelor's degree from one of the best colleges in America. How does it feel to say that?
Amazing. Beyond amazing. Sometimes I'm still in shock that I made it this far because of everything that I went through. They say our past is our past, and that's why it's behind me. Well, this degree, it's my future, which is before me.
Amen to that.
Absolutely. And what about after you get your degree? Are you going to go further, or is this enough for you?
No, I positively plan on getting my master's in social work. Thinking about my journey, I could never let this be the infamy. There's so much more I crave to learn. My goal is to learn all the knowledge that I can.
Wow, good way of looking at it. I feel the same way. I mean, why should a bachelor's be the finish line? Go as far as you can possibly go. Why limit yourself, right, Tara?
Oh, for sure. The most notable change I've seen in the three of us is our insatiable appetite to learn. When my journey first began, I wanted to hurry up and be over with it. But now that it's coming to an end, I find myself wanting more of this beautiful thing called education.
So another quote that was mentioned in the book states that Black women and girls have made tremendous gains in educational attainment. A fact that has been and should continue to be widely celebrated. However, this statistical narrative of progress obscures other narratives that reveal a continued struggle for both academic achievement and anything resembling equality. Angie, knowing that you've accomplished what they once said you would never do, will that impact the choices you make when you get out of prison?
Yes. Yes, it will. I don't have anything to hide or to be ashamed of. When I walk into an establishment seeking employment, I can proudly say I have my bachelor's degree in liberal arts from Boston University.
That's amazing. Simply amazing.
One last thing, Ange. What's a major factor in your life that you feel will alter your future for the better by getting this degree?
Just how it will affect my granddaughter. She's 7 years old, and I know the smile that it'll put on her face will be extremely priceless. She'll know that if I can do it, so can she.
That's beautiful. So I read a chapter in Angela Davis's book, The Meaning of Freedom, and she said, when prison was first proposed as an alternative to corporal and capital punishment, its advocates passionately stated that the prison could reform, rehabilitate, and prepare people to be better citizens. What do you ladies think? Does it sound like anything we've experienced? Tara, let's start with you.
This is kind of hard for me to answer because most people who know me know that I was a heavy drug user when I came here in 2006. And although I would never glorify the institution of incarceration, I would be lying if I said prison didn't make me a better person. I got sober and I stayed sober. And that college degree that I earned for $10 and hard work, that lowers my chances to reoffend and come back to prison. Prison saved me, changed my life for the better, and ironically, it's afforded me some of the best opportunities of my life.
Okay, Angie, what's your take?
Well, in most ways, it just depends on the person. Whereas some people choose to just be here, medicated in the hole and not doing anything, others, they take full advantage of everything offered to better themselves. It works for you, but only if you let it.
So, let's go back to our original topic. Does earning a college degree in Framingham State Prison actually produce a positive change in one's behavior and attitude? Angie?
Yes. I say it's a positive change because it helped me with my self-esteem. At one point, I felt like I could never accomplish getting my GED. It was a very low time in my life, yet I continued to push forward, and once I obtained it, I thought, I wonder if I can do more. And now look, what a little faith and ambition brought me.
I would also say yes, because in the beginning of my college journey, I was just like, hey, I'm a BU student. But I wasn't really reflecting that. I had my name on the roster, but I was barely in class, so my grades weren't reflecting my claim. I was more worried about jail politics than my education. Then I had to think, like, I don't have college money, and these people are paying for me to do this. The only way to go to class was to stay out of the hole. Then I started focusing more on learning, actually getting something that otherwise I wouldn't have had. The more I kept my head in school, the further away I was from the negativity, and then all my moves changed. Honestly, if I wasn't so focused on my education, I'd still be jumping in and out of trouble. So again, yeah, it definitely created a positive change for me. What about you, Tara?
Oh, honey, it's a definite yes for me. Also, because earning this college education is by far the best thing that ever happened to me. I used to be a troublemaker, always fighting and going to the hole. But when I became a college student, I knew I had to get my life together. I became more focused and less confrontational because I had something to actually work towards. When I went to my parole hearing and the board members complimented me on my participation and achievements with the BU Prison Education Program, I knew then how crucial this program was for my life beyond these walls. Angie, she gave us the stats of the women who have graduated from the program, and it's an astonishing 36 women out of 47 that got their bachelor's degree and never returned back to prison. In the article, Education Opportunities in Prison Are Key to Reducing Crime, it states that individuals who were incarcerated and did not complete high school were rearrested at the highest rate of 60.4%, while those who had a college degree were rearrested at a rate of 19.1%.
These numbers do not lie. I believe that it proves that a college education plays a big part in recidivism and the heavy rotation through these doors. Angie, thank you again for coming and sharing your story.
Well, I've heard so much about this podcast, and I'm so thankful for you both allowing me to come and share my perspective, but also hear yours. Tara, something that you mentioned earlier about how Black and brown girls feel left out and when it comes to education just really hit home for me, because people do not take into consideration where we come from and how we get there. When I went to school, it was hard to focus. They considered me stupid, so I considered myself stupid. I didn't have the resources that I needed. So being here today is such a blessing. Thank you both.
Well, thank you, Angie, and thank you to all our listeners. We'll speak with you again on the T and the Y.
Hi, my name is Rebecca.
And I'm Kaya.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the T and Y, and we're here to offer some more context about how this podcast came to be.
Yes, this podcast was submitted as a final project by three women who are part of the Boston University Prison Education Program and who are incarcerated at Framingham Prison.
Shatira, Yami, and Miss Angie were all students in the Education and Justice Speaker Series, a course that Kaya and I co-taught at Framingham in fall 2021 as part of the Law, Education, and Justice work at the Harvard Radcliffe Institute.
For their final project, these women wanted to discuss their experiences with educational programming inside Framingham, and they chose a podcast as their medium of communication. However, due to technological restrictions, the women weren't actually able to record the podcast inside Framingham.
Yes, they were only able to give us a live performance of the podcast in class, but they wanted their conversation to be shared with the public. So with permission from the Mass DOC, we recruited three women on the outside to take on the roles of Shatira, Yami, and Miss Angie and bring their words to life.
These three women have a very special connection to one of the women inside, Miss Angie. One of them is Miss Angie's daughter, Shanita. One of them is her cousin, and one of them is her sister. Their names are Laetania and Natalie. We wanted to use the rest of our time on this podcast to talk to Shanita, Laetania, and Natalie about what this experience means to them.
Okay, ladies. Thank you. So, how did that feel?
It felt good. Now that it's over and everything is put on record, it feels good.
Yeah, I was a bit nervous, but it definitely was refreshing to actually get this done, because I feel like we've been focusing so hard on trying to bring them to life that it just made us so nervous, but it turned out to be everything that I thought it would be, and then some. So,
Well, I think this is just a pretty cool experience all the way around. Listening to what they went through, talking to you guys, meeting Rebecca and Kaya, like, this is cool. And then I'm with my family, so.
And would you be willing to speak about that, what, like, just particularly you recording these your voices and their words and just your relationship to them.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
So, I mean, I'll start off, and Miss Angie is my mother. My name is Shanita, and for me, it's real personal. I'm not going to cry and do what I usually do, you know, but it's my mom, and that feeling is kind of indescribable. When I hear people talk about her, it's a part of her that I don't really know, because I know the mother Angie. Everybody else knows Miss Angie and what she's doing inside of Framingham. And it's been like that for a long time. But one thing that I can say, like without a doubt, is that I am extremely proud of her. Because when she was convicted, she was given a natural life sentence, which means that she never had a plan to come home. And she had to go in with that, knowing that she had three small children. She had a younger sisters. She had her mother. She had a bunch of cousins, nieces, nephews, uncles, aunts. And they just were separated, you know. But she did not go in and bury her head. In layman's terms, she made it, you know. She took every opportunity that she could, whether it was just to mentor somebody or to actually get into a program, to write her children. I have so many cards and letters and pictures and visits. I mean, I can go on and on. That's my mother, like I said when I began this. But I'm just proud of her. She's doing her thing. And as a child, I never thought that she would come home. My family told me that she would never come home. Some believed that she would, but for the most part, they thought that she would never come home. Now I know that she's eligible for parole. We just had a parole hearing where so many people came together and spoke on her behalf, including my brothers and myself. And now we know that she has an opportunity to come out here with us. So we're just waiting for that day. And I just want to say thank you to Kaya, to Rebecca, to my cousin Tanya, and to my aunt Natalie for taking this journey, because that's what it's been like. I think they'll speak a little bit about it, but as I mentioned, this is very personal for us because we were very close as young children. We're all in our 30s now, but as we got older, life took us in different directions, and this project was just an opportunity for us to reconnect on every level. We've traveled and sat inside Starbucks, you know, and did that for the first time. That was fun, you know, like it was different, but it was fun.
Our pre-recording that we did. Right. We went to Tanya's house.
Right. And, yeah. Tanya's husband.
Got to hear ourselves and how crazy we sounded at first.
And get his feedback of what he thought of how we all sounded. And it was pretty cool. It was fun because we got a lot of giggles and laughs in during that session.
And I think it's just been therapeutic. And for me, I know I've been telling my daughter about it, and she's very excited. You know, the fact that we're gonna be recorded, that Auntie Nat is doing it, and Cousin Tanya is doing it. And, you know, she was like, are you guys on a business call? And, you know, like, yeah, you know, so we are. That's exactly what we're doing. Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's an opportunity for us to, like they said in the podcast, not to stop here. You know what I mean? But just, this is like a taste of, you know, what it could be. And I'm excited for that. It's been a lot of hurtful things throughout the years. But, you know, as I said in the beginning, we never thought that we would see what's going on with her case. As a child, I thought my mother would be in prison forever. I'm 34 years old now, and now, like literally in the past 6 months, I have a new outlook on life. You know, I've never thought about marriage and my mother being there, or having more children and my mother being a part of that. I took my daughter to Framingham at 2 weeks old. I took her out there on the commuter rail. I didn't have money for a cab. I walked her in a stroller. These are the things that we went through just to maintain that relationship with my mother. She's been through a lot, a hell of a lot. So for her to have her bachelor's degree and be able to walk and smile, as she said in the podcast, you know, this is a dream come true for us.
And the dedication and the love too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. We have a lot of family support. We have a lot of community support, which is something that I've never tapped into. I used to see activists and stuff as a kid and be like, how do they survive? How do they support themselves? Like, do they do this for free? Do they really care about the problems? And now that I consider myself kind of an abolitionist, I understand. You know what I mean? It is for the people. Like, I want my community to be better. It's not a cliche. It's not a stereotype. It's the truth. When I say it, I have a young daughter who's growing up, and I want her to be proud and feel comfortable and know that, you know, the sky is the limit and that she can do whatever she wants to do. Her grandmother's doing it, her mother is doing it, and she's gonna do it.
And just to know that Angie has been going to college and she has a degree, nobody has an excuse not to. I know the money, you know, that is an issue because college is expensive.
Right.
But that is a lot of dedication, especially with the GED 11 times. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, I can't even imagine what that was like.
And I remember those phone calls, you know, baby girl, you know, and then what could I really say? You know, I didn't understand how hard that was. In my head, I'm like, wow, her GED, she can't get past that. But I couldn't say that we have a 20-minute phone call. And my job was to console my mother, not to judge her, you know. But the fact that she kept going, and now she has her bachelor's. She's a certified cosmetologist. When she comes home, I'm going to be her first hair client. My daughter will be her second, you know. And third.
And third.
She's just an awesome person, and so is Shatira, and so is Yami. I know every time I call, Yami's like, hey, Shanita. And I'm like, hey, Yami, you know, so the relationship that they have is not just through the podcast, but it's a real life relationship. Her and Shatira are very close. You know, she said about Yami, she said, Shanita, she's young. You know, she could be anything she wants to be. She can sing, she can cook, she can dance. She's the shit.
She's brilliant. I can say.
You know, she bigs both of them up. So, you know, all three of them are stars in their own right. And I'm just happy that we were able to, you know, do a little justice for them.
And I just gotta say, every time I see Angie, she always look fly. Hair always done. She's always dressed very well. She always got on a pair of nice sneakers. Like, she keeps herself together, put together very well.
Yeah, I call her fancy.
Even though she's in prison.
I call her Miss Fancy. She's
flyer than
I am.
She looks really good all the time.
But that's my mother and I love her, you know? So, I'm just
I just wanted to say real quick, like, my sister being in Framingham is like always been hard for me, but I've always been proud of her. And it's like seeing all the things that she's doing, I'm getting kind of emotional, but like seeing all the things that she's doing and all the things that she went through and like to get here, I couldn't be more proud of her than I am. And like even Tira, I don't know her, but just reading through this podcast, I'm proud of her too. I was proud to like be her voice because she fought hard too. Being on drugs and all that, that couldn't have been easy. Getting sober and staying sober, that couldn't have been easy. But they did it. You know? I just feel sorry. But I am. I'm just extremely proud to be a part of this, to get my sister's words put out there. And again, even these other two women that I don't even know, I'm just grateful to be here and a part of this because these are definitely some amazing women, like I said, who've went against all odds to better themselves in whatever way when they could have just gave up. I know that here, my sister had a life sentence and that she would never come home. She could have gave up right then and there and said, well, hey, let's just get it over with. Let's just go ahead and do whatever it takes to die because I'm going to die here anyway. But yet and still, over 30 years later, you're still fighting to get your life back, you know? And she deserves that. I just can't wait for her to like be able to come home and have sleepovers and wear matching pajamas and get our nails done together. Because she asked me that. Mm-hmm. Can we get our nails done together? So just like the simple things. I'm just so grateful that she never gave up. Because I know how hard that had to be not to give up.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, well, at least they know. They spoke it out into the universe and the universe is receiving it.
That's right.
So.
And we don't, and you said, you know, you don't know them, but they know us. Because my mother talks about all of us, and they know Tanya's playing Yami, Natalie's doing Shatera, and I'm speaking for my mother. So they are excited. I said, we're doing it today.
I definitely hope that we make them as proud as, like, I am just reading this story. I hope that we can make them as proud as they made me, you know?
We are so grateful for you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking a listen. This podcast would not have been possible without the support of a loving tribe. To our three amazing actors, Shanita L. Jefferson, Laetania Tirado, and Natalie Evans, thank you all for bringing the voices of these three women to us beyond prison walls. To our amazing vocalist, Chrisai Maya Jefferson Taylor, who is Shanita's daughter and Miss Angie's granddaughter, thank you for opening this podcast with your sweet, inspirational song. A special thanks to our supporters at Harvard Radcliffe Institute and Massachusetts Department of Corrections for understanding and supporting our mission to champion the voices of incarcerated people nationwide. And above all, we want to thank you, Miss Angie, Yami, and Shatera, for sharing your words with us all. Your spirit and your presence are felt beyond any prison wall, and your commitment to education is a bright beacon of light to the Framingham community. Thank you.